This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George. And today I have one of my a colleague who I respect greatly, who I've been on her show a few times. And, you know, it's nice to have a like-minded physician talk about the fact that they love what they do. And, you know, one of the things that I was always afraid of in this whole evolution of Obamacare was that I would lose my ability to be able to practice medicine, and that I would be run out of my profession. And it's still a little bit of a fear, but less so after speaking with Dr. Hurley, who Lorraine Hurley is a pioneer, in my opinion. She's an internal medicine, I believe, internal medicine physician who left her private practice because she felt that it was a choice between practicing medicine using the Hippocratic Oath and being true to who she is as a physician and a healer. And I wanted to get her to come on today to tell us what it's like, one, why she did it, and what it's like on the other side. And I want patients to be empowered. And I think Dr. Hurley incorporates everything that I hope to be as a physician. And I just want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you, Dr. George. I guess we have our mutual admiration club because I admire you greatly for the work you're doing. That's why you're such a frequent guest on my show.
Well, I do appreciate that, and I'm sorry it took me so long to get you onto mine. But now that I have you, I want people to get to know you. So tell us, you know, where are you from originally, and what brought you into medicine initially?
Okay, I can do it. It's a very non-traditional story. I was brought up in Detroit, Michigan, and I didn't come from a family that really had a lot of access to education. You know, I don't want to say poor, but lower socioeconomic. My parents were very young and uneducated themselves when they started their family. So, you know, education wasn't an extraordinarily strong focus in our lives. It was about, you know, really kind of struggling to make ends meet. And I never enjoyed school. I dropped out of high school. In my late 20s, I decided that it was partly because I kind of just marched to a different drummer. Mm-hmm. I went and got a GED. I went to college. For the first time in my life, understood that I was actually intelligent. And people say, you can't mean that. I said, no, I really do mean that. It just wasn't a self-image that I had, that I was actually intelligent. So I had really excellent mentors. I went to UMass Boston. It's a commuter school. By then I was living out east. And got an undergraduate in chemistry and went to school with a lot of other late-life bloomers and people with a lot of ambition towards going into medicine, so because I was on a pre-med track, but had always had an interest in nutrition and naturopathy. But as I got involved in academia and I began working with a fellow, Bruce Pierce, over at BU, Boston University School of Medicine, I was basically told that my track was an MD-PhD, that I had the ability and I should just go for it. Well, I did start out as an MD-PhD, and I did enjoy research, but the pace and the demands of our training, Dr. George, I couldn't see myself doing that for 7 years. It was enough to try and get through 4 years of medical school. And so I dropped the PhD part of it, but have never lost my love of learning, of really examining what's going on. Actually, it's not internal, it's family medicine, and I took up a private practice. I joined with two others in private practice down here on Cape Cod. And within 6 months, this was just when the managed care was beginning to infiltrate practice, we were working, honestly, round the clock. Now, I had a young child. I had a baby. She was born in my internship year. I tell people, honest to God, I didn't sleep for 3 years. And it was just this kind of blend of lifestyle, realizing the cost that it was to me personally to go into the office every day. And the worst part of it was I did have an interest in educating people. I did believe that people could be well. I knew that nutrition and other means, like we talk about functional medicine, were very, very helpful. I was attending a lot of conferences. And it just kind of grew organically. And I mean, I can walk you through the step-by-step, but that's really my introduction to medicine was simply because I was being encouraged to go into medicine, and I really didn't quite understand what medicine was.
Now, you were out in Massachusetts, which is the epicenter of Obamacare, Romneycare, and this whole transformation of the healthcare system. To me, that's like ground zero. What was it like? I mean, I know you were working around the clock. I mean, I assume, like everybody else in medicine, the reimbursement became such a chore that you actually had to pick up the volume of people that you saw. Is that correct?
That's correct. We had to pick up the volume, and at one point, you know, I was seeing 28 or 30 patients a day. I would wake up in the middle of the night thinking that, oh, I didn't do that. Oh, I should have said that. Oh, I should have ordered, you know, because you're moving so quickly that all of a sudden you're not, I didn't have a sense of control over what was coming through. And as a new physician in the area, I was getting a lot of people who had been, let's just say, fired or failed by their practitioners. They had some fairly complex issues, things that we didn't understand it then as well as we do today, like fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue or autism. And so I was attempting to work as, you know, really strong as an advocate for appropriate acknowledgement and care. And what happened is that we kept having to hire more people. We ended up having a coder. So now that we're not only seeing more people, they're holding on to our money for three, sometimes 6 months. They would deny every claim we made. So you have to hire a professional coder. And this was just about the time, too, that they were talking about HIPAA. And electronic. So I didn't actually work with electronic. I got out before that became the mainstay of primary care. But that's really what was happening. I will tell you what I did at the time in order to address those needs is I began to run workshops. So if I had a patient and I knew they needed some education and some help, but it wasn't going to be an exchange in our day-to-day, you know, in the office, I did begin to create workshops. Those were very popular. So I could relax a little bit, spend time with people, help them to understand what was happening and how they could better advocate for their own well-being.
And that's what it's all about, isn't it? I think that, to me, and I'm sure you would agree, that it's about the doctor-patient relationship and the communication between the two. To me now, it's about a one-way transfer here. Doctors, if they do talk to the patients, they're walking in, they're writing a prescription, not listening to anything. Apparently, you can only deal with one problem at a time, and you have to make an appointment for the next problem, which was never the case. It's not a holistic approach anymore. Did you find that before you left?
I did. And, you know, nowadays they're all sitting – I hear, you know, feedback from people. I walk in, and my doctor's not even looking at me. She's at a computer typing something in. No, this is what we found, is that there wasn't enough time. There was no way to actually truly know. You know, I said to my partner one day in a fit of frustration – I said, you know, I can't believe how many prescriptions I'm writing for antihypertensive drugs. It's so easy to reduce blood pressure with, you know, certain dietary interventions, with exercise. And she just looked me straight in the eye and she said, why are you complaining? This is your bread and butter. And this is kind of how the system had gotten set up, so that you would get the patients would have to come back to get their prescription refilled. And I was prescribing a lot of drugs that I, you know, sometimes they are essential. But I was doing a lot of prescribing that I didn't feel was essential, and it was just this kind of circle, loop, you know? Yeah, so it was very uncomfortable.
Managing the problem.
Managing the problem, not directing it towards solutions. This is where my attending conferences in functional medicine or environmental medicine and so forth kind of got a foothold on me, because I was able to go to these conferences and make sense out of a lot of what was happening in medicine. And that really stimulated my transition out of that frenetic way of life in practice. And you know, the thing is it wasn't, not only was it not good for me, obviously it wasn't good for for patients. If they knew that you were willing to talk to them, that's really what they wanted you to do. With that saying, people don't care what you know till they know that you care. I don't care how smart you are.
It's the art of medicine, basically.
Right.
I think that what Obamacare or what the government thinks, it's cookie cutter, that you walk in, someone comes in with a diagnosis, and then you just write a prescription, and bam, it's all fixed. And it's not that easy. I mean, we're good at what we do as physicians, so we don't complain and we don't tell people. You know, we don't put our business out there. So people have this conception that it's just this cakewalk. It's not. And every patient is different. And, you know, when we come back in the next segment, I definitely want to delve more into functional medicine, because to me that is that is a direction that medicine should have always been going in, and
That's right.
somehow got sidetracked by corporate interest and pharmaceutical interest and hospital interest, and it is always about some other bigger picture, but not the doctor and the patient. Anyway, I think we both are guilty, to tell you the truth, of falling into the trap. Doctors by not complaining about loss of autonomy, and patients wanting to get something for nothing. At one point, people were calling in for prescriptions and just getting them written on the phone without even being seen. As a patient, I would be up in arms if that would happen with me. What happened with patients that they were just like being treated like numbers?
That's right. That's right. Well, it's kind of been, I think, a slow, gradual agenda, if you will. And I think Obamacare is just the axe, on the wood of what mm-hmm. used to make up healthcare. So, the difference is you practice healthcare, Dr. George. I was attempting to practice healthcare, and I say this not to denigrate our colleagues, but medical healthcare has become an oxymoron. There is no health in medicine. It's not about health. It is about the sale. Look at our gross domestic product. Look at how much money the United States economy generates in terms of health care, and yet we're one of the sickest countries in the world, Western mm-hmm. countries in the world. Make that specific claim.
It doesn't make sense at all. And I know before you left, you must have seen people come in with shopping bags full of medication. Wasn't that astounding that someone could even remember what they were taking, let alone when they were supposed to take it.
And they still weren't better. Right, and there was no attention. Like you say, everyone's unique. And this is where the practice, it got to the point where it wasn't a matter of, when you end up with a lawsuit for some, for some mistake or carelessness. It was when. And this was the kind of foreboding that I began to feel in practice when somebody would come in to see me. And I was guilty at one point in an effort to get through the day of maybe sending someone out with 5 prescriptions. Now, we're taught drug-drug interactions. We're taught to be careful. There's certain things we know we don't do with something else. But you start to think to yourself, this isn't right. I can't do this. Mm-hmm. And, they would come in with medications from their cardiologist, from their allergist, from their, internist, from their neurologist, mm-hmm. particularly as they age. We do have this is a retirement resort type of area, so there's, a larger than usual number of the elderly. And then you get into polypharmacy, and you get into the fact that as people age, they cannot tolerate the so-called normal doses of medications that you're giving them. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what would go wrong would be a reaction to a medication, and this was too infrequently identified as the source of a problem. So you might give them a medication, they have a side effect, you prescribe another medication without really understanding or taking the time to discern that perhaps it was the first medication and this is just a side effect and not a, quote, new problem. So it was crazy making.
It is. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that nasal stuffiness can cause snoring and decrease the amount of oxygen that your body receives? A decrease in oxygen to the brain can cause problems with memory and concentration, and in severe cases, it can cause stroke. A decrease in oxygen to the heart can lead to high blood pressure, and in severe cases, a heart attack. Nasal stuffiness can be caused by exposure to irritants such as dust, mold, pollution, and chemicals. It can also be caused by exposure to trees, grass, and certain foods such as corn, wheat, eggs, soy, milk, and various meats. Medical treatment with nasal sprays and/or antihistamines that don't cause drowsiness can alleviate the congestion. It is important not to use over-the-counter spray decongestants since they can be addictive and actually make breathing more difficult. See your doctor for a complete evaluation of your nose. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call, and my special guest today, Dr. Lorraine Hurley, who is a functional medicine physician. And for those who don't know what functional medicine is, you need to know, because it's now about keeping yourself out of the hospital and keeping yourself away from Obamacare, because it's not about health care, as we've always said in the show. It's about control. And now I'd like that Dr. Hurley to actually, you know, tell my listeners, what is functional medicine? It sounds really like pie in the sky a little bit, but it's really what medicine's all about, isn't it?
It really is. It's about what healthcare is all about, absolutely. And you know, medicine as practiced under the Hippocratic Oath, let's just say. So I would basically had met one of my new patients when I was in practice, was a chiropractor, and I was talking to him about my dissatisfaction with practice. I couldn't believe I'd spent all that time and money, and I was within months just, you know, so unhappy. And he suggested I go to a conference put on by a man by the name of Jeffrey Bland, who is considered the, quote, father of the term functional medicine. People have been practicing it for a long time. And what functional medicine is it doesn't identify you with your diagnosis. It identifies the process. So functional medicine is looking for things like nutritional insufficiencies, food allergies, leaky gut, hormonal axis imbalances. It's looking for inflammation. It basically says, functional medicine says you can have two people with high blood pressure. One might have high blood pressure because of a magnesium deficiency. Another might have high blood pressure because of a diet that just isn't suitable for their metabolism. So if you were to, you know, in medicine, you treat both with an antihypertensive. In functional medicine, you identify the underlying stress, and you begin to work there. And, you know, amazing. Treat somebody with magnesium that has high blood pressure if you suspect an insufficiency of that nutrient, and the blood pressure normalizes. On the other hand, somebody may not necessarily be magnesium deficient, but they may be consuming a lot of sugar or processed food. Get them to make dietary changes, the blood pressure normalizes. So that's functional medicine in a nutshell. It doesn't go looking. There are lots of tests that can be utilized in functional medicine. I think the longer you do it, the less you rely upon those because they can be unnecessarily expensive or sometimes more information that's needed. But you can actually utilize functional medicine testing to look for not a diagnosis but for indications of imbalance, and then you work to rebalance what's showing up. Is that a fair description?
No, that's an excellent description. But it distills the essence of what I say the art of health of medicine, because everybody's not the same, and not everybody will respond to hypertensive medication the same way. They don't need to. And just imagine if people were actually given individualized health care like you just described, how much cheaper healthcare system would be. I mean, you're talking magnesium. That's pennies, you know, to buy versus how much for, you know, whatever three or four different hypertensive medications that people are on, or God forbid they have a complication, they took too many, they became hypotensive where their blood pressure dropped too far, they broke their hip because they fell. I mean, all sorts of, you know, unintended consequences from medications that you may not need. Don't you remember when you were in medical school that things like, I don't know, colon cancer, breast cancer were so rare? I mean, and they were diseases of the senior citizens, not of 20 and 30-year-olds. I mean, it's just completely topsy-turvy. And I know that you speak on your show about nutrition, definitely. And I want to touch base on this genetically modified food issue. You know, my take on it is, obviously, it's not food. It's something that's designed to get something to market faster, bigger, and hopefully with no bugs in it. You know, it's got anti-fertilizer, like Roundup and that sort of stuff in it. But what's your it has an underlying effect in the amount of disease that we're seeing. What's your take on that?
Oh, first of all, food in general is key, and so much has happened to alter the food that we eat and the food that we obtain today that that's a huge part. But the genetically modified foods are insidious. They're malevolent. If in fact, they were to do in the market what they claim, Monsanto claims that they're doing, you might understand their continual pressing to introduce more of this into the market, but in fact they're not. So not only are they failing on an economic level, they are exposing people. I don't know if you heard the story about what was going on in India. They sold them all of this genetically modified corn, really kind of forced them into growing the genetically modified corn. It devastated hundreds of Indian farmers ended up committing suicide because they were completely... But let's just talk about what it does in the body. Genetically modified food has been shown without, beyond any reasonable doubt, you do sometimes have to go to the research that's coming out of Europe or other countries, not out of not industry-sponsored research, try to find honest scientific inquiry, objective inquiry. And what it's doing is it's destroying our immune systems. So they also show that it causes infertility and that it causes an increase in birth defects. Now so when you stop to think about it, the genetically modified foods, and here's the problem, is it's getting into our food supply. They're fighting us on labeling. So most corn and most soy is now genetically modified, and you're not going to know it if you buy processed foods. If there's certain additives that are derived from the corn or the soy that are making their way into our food supply. And it's not being labeled, and it's not being understood in terms of what it's derived from. So it's begun to really, in America, in the United States, no other country in the world permits what we permit in terms of genetically modified food. None.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yeah. And so, Monsanto will basically run a campaign in Europe saying we're all for the right to know and the right this and the right that. And yet here in America, they have succeeded so far in labeling from every state. Now, recently, because states are always coming up, that may have changed. But to my knowledge, up till today, there is not one state yet that is requiring labeling that has gotten this passed through their state legislature. So it's something that we have to be aware of. We have to get the information out there. Because you said you're talking cancer. Now, when you're talking about how the genetically modified foods... And again, I would just encourage your listeners to go up and look. The GI tract is our body's largest immune organ. So what happens when we introduce genetically modified foods is we're altering, in many cases, the constituency of the microbes that are there to protect and defend us. So we are seeing now they've actually found microbes in the body's GI tract of people that have been eating genetically modified foods, and they're seeing that it is altering the microbial ecology of our body, and some people are making pesticides in their guts because these genetically modified constituents in our food are interacting with the DNA of the microbes in our gut. So it's really insidious.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty scary. That puts a whole other spin on you are what you eat, doesn't it?
It sure does.
I mean, can you imagine eating Roundup?
Yeah, right, exactly. Look at a can of Roundup and look at an apple, and which would you rather be? Because food really is a transmutation process. And I used to believe that we could alter our diets in a way that we would require minimal supplementation. I don't know that that's particularly true anymore, because if you're trying to avoid pesticides, preservatives, additives, genetically modified food, and you're going to your grocery store, it's going to limit the diversity and variety of the foods that you'll be consuming. So I think it's really a wise consideration to consider supplementation in your diet as well.
Have you noticed there's been a push towards trying to demonize vitamins recently? They don't cause any, they don't do anything or they cause harm. Have you seen that push? My favorite was there was like an ad, a banner ad for a drug, some sort of pharmaceutical on the page of this article that talked against taking vitamins. I mean, how obvious can you be?
Right. Well, here's what's happening with the supplement industry. I would caution, you do need to be aware, not all supplements are created equal. There's whole food supplements, there's synthetic supplements, and by the way, vitamin C and vitamin B are now being produced with genetically modified organisms to make these.
What?
So, Yeah, wow. Yeah. There are certain vitamins that are now being produced, synthetic vitamins that are now being produced with the use of genetically modified organisms. And there's going to be a push, but what's happening is because they haven't been able to convince the American public to stay away, it's become this billion-dollar industry supplements. The pharmaceutical industries are going up and buying a lot of these mom-and-pop type supplement companies, and you have to research the companies you work with. I was listening in on a consult that one of my neighbors was doing with Sherry Rogers, and she writes the book Detoxify or Die. But she was talking now about the alteration of standards, and this may have something to do with Codex Alimentarius. What they're doing now is they're producing vitamins that are not strong enough or are not in balance. So it's not that they're going to harm you. It's just maybe that you're wasting your money. So you do want to spend time and you want to take the effort to research companies. Not all are created equal. And if you find out that the company, you know, for instance, what I would recommend is, for one of your patients would be that they talk to you, Dr. George, about what to take. You know, you have access to companies that spend the money and the time to have their products evaluated by an independent third-party evaluator that understand, you know, the difference between a synthetic or a whole food supplement. Mm-hmm. And so it does make a difference. Yeah. But no, you're right. The last thing on, you know, basically it comes down to market share. If people are buying vitamins and supplements and getting well, they're not taking their drugs. So right. Now the pharmaceutical industry is buying up a lot of the supplement market.
So basically they get a dip of whatever you do. And what they're making is so weak that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So it doesn't work because it's not designed to work,
That's right.
I mean, you really have to be on your P's and Q's. I mean, as I said before, nobody cares more about you than you do. The government doesn't, and except for your mother and father, your loved ones. You need to protect yourself. You have to have a dog in the hunt, and you actually have to take responsibility, especially now of all time in our history, for your health care. And doing your due diligence is one of the things that I tell.
Oh, hello. I don't have any audio.
Pool. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay. I counsel my patients to do their own due diligence and to be partners in their care, because if we don't work together, then I can't get them better. Is that something that you found that it's easier to do now that you have the time to spend with them?
Well, absolutely, absolutely, because first thing you do is you develop a rapport. You have a genuine relationship. The second thing, you're educating, and by that what I mean is you are basically handing responsibility to your patient. You're saying to them, you know, this you do not have to live with high blood pressure or high cholesterol, mm-hmm. and you do not have to take toxic drugs for these conditions if you are willing to change, and that if you want things in your life to change, you have to change things in your life. So it's by providing people with education, and because they respect our level of education, they know that nobody gets to be an MD. Nobody gets an MD after the name unless they really have worked very, very hard. I can promise you that. So they respect your ability to help them to discern. You know, so they may ask you a question. You may give guidance. But it brings a relationship. You end up becoming a partner, an advocate, an aide, a witness. You end up, you know, sometimes a coach. You're somewhat coaching.
Exactly.
Good for you. You can do it. That's great that you made those changes. Nothing's better, Dr. George, than seeing someone, having them come in maybe a month or 2 months later. They've dropped 20 pounds. They're no longer swollen. They look fantastic. And they'll say, all I did was get gluten and dairy out of my diet, and I've been exercising.
Wow.
I can't believe how great I feel. It's just so gratifying. You know, of course, and then they may want to take it to the next level. You know, it takes time. Like if you have a long-seated issue, look at how prevalent hypothyroidism is now.
Yeah.
Almost everybody's hypothyroid, right? Well, if you can talk to your patient, sometimes, you know, the prescription replacement is very helpful for a time. But if you can say, well, the thyroid needs more than iodine. It uses zinc and it needs selenium. And if you're not meditating or you're not getting yourself into that parasympathetic rest, digest, and repair, if you're constantly on fight or flight, your thyroid can't function normally. There's this interrelationship. So you begin to help them to understand the interrelationships. And you say, So what does stress reduction have to do with thyroid? Everything.
Dr. George?
Everything.
Well, yeah, on that break, let's take a break and return. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Come on. Follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that sleep is an important weapon against infection? Sleep is important because it is restorative. During sleep, known as REM, the body recuperates and resets. For example, the immune system increases its activity and stress hormones drop. There is a correlation between sleep deprivation and frequent colds. The average adult should get 7 to 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep per night, and a child needs more since they are growing. Sleep hygiene is important to set a good foundation. Techniques to promote good quality restorative sleep include going to bed at the same time at night, avoiding alcohol or caffeine prior to bedtime, avoiding exercise in the evening, reading to a young child at bedtime, avoidance of drinking fluids late in the evening, and avoidance of taking decongestants at bedtime. If you are having problems sleeping more than once a week, you should see a doctor for further evaluation. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Before the break, we were really getting to some, I think, really the nuts and bolts of what it means to really understand the whole patient and not just the disease process. Because everything actually is interconnected. You mentioned the thyroid before the break, and I think you're absolutely right. I see a ton of people coming in with on Synthroid, and you know they're always sick, and they're all their stress indicators are out of control. The inflammatory markers are up, and it's all connected. Mind and body are connected, are they not?
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's where, you know, just before we even came on the radio, we're talking about we're working with energy healers, and
mm-hmm.
those interconnections are what we're talking about is tangibles. We can take a blood test, and we can look for an inflammatory marker or allergens or autoimmune markers, but you can't really measure compassion, peace, love. This is the mind aspect of it. But we can see the effect of those intangibles on tangible markers.
True.
And that's the beauty of energy, you know, like incorporating the next level, whether we call it sound or frequency or vibrational or any more of the subtle, you know, therapies and practices that are out there. What we're really doing is we're utilizing that aspect of our functioning called the mind to assist, to be kind, to care for our body.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the ultimate act of love, right? To love yourself is to take care of yourself, and to it is a temple, basically. So if you're going to put things that are toxic into it, willfully or unwillfully, eventually there probably will be a price to pay for that. Now, you know, when I think of energy medicine, because I know a lot of my listeners don't know anything about that, but when I do explain it to patients specifically, you know, there are some patients who come in and, you know, emotionally they're so overwrought that it's leading them to the disease that they're entering in your office with. And you know that if you gave them medication, it still wouldn't work because it's above that. And I talk to them about cells being batteries, basically, that everything in our body has an energy source. And if it's not in balance or if it's not working properly, it leads to disease. Is that one way of looking at it, or how do you explain that to your patients?
Right. Well, I explain that, first of all, everything is energy. I mean, even a molecule, a substance is energy. It just happens to be energy that's condensed down into a physical form. When you talk about energy medicine, when you take the time with your patient, as you do, and you sit and you're having a conversation, that's a form of energy medicine, because the energy whatever you think, whatever you feel, Dr. George, or I would think or feel, if somebody comes into the office and they know they're respected, they're going to be heard, that we care about what happens to them, that sets up a resonance. Thoughts and feelings are things. They can be measured now. The Institute of Heart Math is doing this. There are people doing some phenomenal work. They actually know the frequencies for a liver or for a vitamin C molecule or for an eyeball or for the thought, you know, of fear. So we're getting to the point that we're able to acknowledge that everything that's happening is at its core energy, and we can utilize different, I mean, the field is so vast. I would say I used to utilize something called quantum biofeedback, and this was basically I would just introduce an a range, what we call a library of frequencies, through harnesses. People wouldn't feel anything. The frequencies would either match. There would be a low vibration or a high vibration, and then it would feed it back to a computer program. And so I was able to say to people, I could talk to them in the language of energy. Now, we still used food and supplements and herbs and things of that sort, sometimes medications if that was required for a particular reason. Mm-hmm. But it gave them the ability to comprehend how much more complex they are and how they have these tools. You know, even something as simple as affirmations, the spoken word. And it's funny, I had a guest on today's show that was giving me the difference. Here's the example she gave. Oh, I know that abundance is drawn to me. I hope, right, is the unspoken thing. Versus, I am so good at what I'm going to do, at what I do, and I'm going to take it out to the world. I'm not going to let anyone stop me from doing everything I can to help other people. And what she was demonstrating with her voice is that if we have issues around, let's say, prosperity or abundance, maybe we just can't talk ourselves into thinking, you know, I'm going, abundance is drawn to me. Mm-hmm. What we can do is work with the energy of those beliefs that do serve us. And so it's a simple thought. It's a feel. You have to generate the feeling state behind it. I am going to be well. I am going to take care of myself. I am going to get to it. I'm going to use this as an opportunity to learn about myself. And I, you know, to learn about how I can have a relationship to myself at all levels, you know, whether we're talking the physical, the mental, the emotional, or the spiritual. So the truth of the matter is that going down that thing, if we go spiritual, emotional, mental, physical, the further down you go, the more dense the energies are. The further up you go, the lighter the energies are. And when you understand this, you realize that one of the goals of being well is to pull higher vibrational energies down into your body. Mm-hmm. So a lot of us, when we get sick, the underpinnings are our thoughts, beliefs, and feelings.
It's really interesting. And I see that in patients. You know, there's a pain or a wound. It doesn't matter when it happened, but it's not gone. It may be childhood. And when you really take the time to listen to them, and I see military, so people who have left the military twice a week, and it really is one of those, you can feel when you connect with somebody, and you can feel the give and take, and it's they're wounded, and you can, not just physically, but emotionally, and I can't even, and just leave it, having them say, just thank you for listening, and thank you for caring, and it meant, you can see it meant a lot to them, and they leave feeling better than when they walked in. I mean, that's the degree, that's the depth of medicine that we're talking about. There's no way that will be valued in this new system.
Absolutely not. And, you know, you just brought up an interesting point, too, because even though you take more time with your patients, I would take time. I would set up, you know, a consulting session could be 1 to 2 hours. The narrative, you know, if you don't have the time face-to-face, you can ask your patient, please write me your story. Write what's important to you. And then you take the time to read it. And sometimes through that narrative, we can help our patients rewrite the story to become empowered. Just simply to acknowledge, like you say, war veterans. What is happening to war veterans now? Their suicide rates are off the charts because we are not working to help heal those deep wounds that people have had experiences that I really can't fathom. And so it does leave these deep emotional wounds. And one of the ways that we can help people heal those deep wounds is by letting the energy move, hearing them, acknowledging them, and then helping them to, as we maybe recreate the narrative around it. But look at, you know, look at how you're okay, you're alive. You know, look at, some people come back from war and they feel guilty that they're alive. You know, that's where you have to meet them. That's where you have to start working with them.
Oh, you're absolutely
okay
right.
Okay, that you're alive. Huh?
There's World War II vets that I've seen who still cry because they lost their buddy. He was standing next to them, and why wasn't it them? And it's a real thing. I mean, they've carried this. They've great grandchildren now. I mean, they've lived their lives, but that pain is not gone. And
right.
if we can't be healers on that level, if we're just drug pushers, then maybe we're no longer, as a profession, we shouldn't be, you know, put on a different plane than the rest of the provider system. And
right.
I choose, and I'm sure that you've already chosen not to lower your standards. And what happened to the colleagues that you left in your practice?
My colleagues were really angry with me. My colleagues,
wow.
And you know, when we met, we got along just fine. But when I began to really complain, when I began to be very vocal about what was happening, about contracts that we were being forced to, you know, that were being shoved down our throat, about what the experience was like for me to have seen 30 patients and then to wake up in the middle of the night having an anxiety attack, because something would seep into my did I do this? Did I forget to
mm-hmm.
do this? Did I ask that question? They were angry at being called on it. Now, I haven't spoken to them in a few years. I think more and more physicians are beginning to, you know, it kind of depends on where they are in their career, Dr. George.
Mm-hmm.
I think the younger physicians are getting how the system's being rigged against them, and I think some of the older physicians are basically, they feel the only option out for them is just to sit it out through retirement. And not everybody. I know that I'm giving some broad generalizations.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that the younger physicians, while they're able to discern what's taking place, I think in many ways they've been recruited less by their ability to think for themselves and more by that left brain capability of regurgitating information. So I'm not sure I feel for my colleagues, and I feel for, but I say to everyone, we all have choices. That's the bottom line. I don't
mm-hmm.
permit my colleagues to be victims. It's unfortunate, but I won't take the position that they're victims. Like you're exercising choices.
Exactly.
It's unfortunate. I'm not saying you shouldn't be angry about it. I'm just saying, you know, you make a choice to either be a part of it or not. And if enough doctors refuse to take part in it, the program cannot be shoved down our throats.
I absolutely, you know, you couldn't have said it. I couldn't have said it better than you just did. I do feel that way. You know, silence is complicity. And just because you're almost about to retire, I mean, you've spent your whole life in a career that, you know, it's a calling, in my opinion. And you're just going to sit by and let it just be devastated, and it's okay. It's not okay. Because to me, there's no coming back from it. If you have a cohort of doctors who were trained not to be healers, but to just be administrators and agents of the government, then you've just broken the healthcare system. And I don't know if you've spoken with colleagues from Canada or other socialized medical system countries, but they're not practicing medicine. They're warehousing patients. They're, you know, some instances in UK, euthanizing senior citizens and people who have bad outcomes that are based on their diagnosis. I mean,
right.
This is not it's horrible. It's eugenics in some instances. I mean, I just couldn't be a part of a system like that.
You know, and here's the whole thing is that you're right. I agree with you. That's what that people have shared those experiences of what it's like to be part of those socialized systems. But let me share. There are some forward thinkers like the Germans in terms of their they've got their spa cities, and they're really invested in homeopathy, you know, which is a form
mm-hmm.
of energy medicine, and they're really invested in making sure people have vacations. Like, you have to go on vacation in Germany.
I like that. That works for me.
Right. But the thing is we have to look at kind of the, you know, it all comes down to follow the money. And as crass as that sounds to people, this is what our medical system has been reduced to, follow the money. And when you can step back and take that just for what it is without, you know, judging it, just take it as, just do the exercise.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that are going to win under Obamacare are those that are siphoning off not just the money, but the lifeblood, the life force of individuality, right, of individual creativity and uniqueness. I think it has everything to do with a kind of mechanistic philosophy of what, you know, we're producers and we're consumers, and God forbid we should actually stand for anything else other than that. I really believe that's what it's come down to.
On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that an inability to lose weight can be due to an underactive thyroid gland? The thyroid gland is an important organ that controls the metabolism. Signs of an underactive thyroid gland include depression, hair loss, weight gain, a low blood pressure, feeling cold, constipation, and a lower libido. Risks for low thyroid function include iron deficiency, liver dysfunction, family history of thyroid disease, and an irregularity in the immune system. If you have noticed any of these symptoms, or you have noticed swelling in the front of your neck, or the color of your shirt feels tight, you should see your doctor for further evaluation, including blood tests to evaluate the levels of thyroid hormone in your bloodstream. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I'm here today with my special guest, Dr. Lorraine Hurley, and we're talking about whole body medicine, functional medicine. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the politics of it, the history of it, the physiology of it. Let's talk about real-world applications now. I mean, everybody seems to be coming down with obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. I mean, these are the top four disease processes, I believe, that are costing the country a ton in treasure and people in terms of their quality of life. You know, let's start with high blood pressure, because that's a big one. You know, tell us some of the natural things that you recommend for your patients to try before they jump on the pharmaceutical bandwagon.
Absolutely. First thing I always recommend is to get, the first rule of toxicology is get the toxin out. So I give them guidance in terms of how to clean up their diet, get rid of processed foods, sugars, pesticides. We covered that pretty well. Mm-hmm. You need to clean up your diet. And there are several culprits. You must avoid all GMOs. Gluten is hugely stressful to most people that are consuming it. The second thing is minerals. We have a need for 90 essential nutrients. There's minerals, there's water-soluble vitamins, fat-soluble vitamins, and essential fatty acids. These and amino acids. These make up the base, you know, your basic needs. They're essential because your body can't make them. You must get them from your food or supplement. And of those, 60 are minerals. So when we're talking about blood pressure or some of the more common conditions, even diabetes, Dr. George, this is often because of mineral insufficiency. Now, one of the things that most of us are completely insufficient in, I don't want to go into deficiency, but if you have muscle aches or pains, if you have cramping, if you have difficulty sleeping, if you have high pulse, if you have cardiac arrhythmias, if you have high blood pressure, magnesium, magnesium, magnesium. Mm-hmm. It's an intracellular mineral, so taking a blood test does not tell you, in other words, your body's going to work it out so that you maintain your electrolyte balance in blood, but it isn't telling you what the intracellular processes are, and magnesium is an intracellular mineral. And because of our growing methods, because of what's happened in agriculture, most of us are markedly insufficient in magnesium. And what I choose, and it's hard to absorb if it's in its solid form, So I have been using magnesium bicarbonate. It's something that you can make really easily with seltzer water and milk of magnesia. And you can go online and look up how to make it. And you don't need, if you follow the recipe online, of 3 tablespoons of milk of mag to a liter of seltzer water, that entire bottle contains about 1,500 milligrams of usable magnesium and I want to say I think 4,500 milligrams of bicarbonate. Now, one of the things we didn't mention, I'll just mention, is a lot of the disease processes that you named are also because of over-acidity. We're over-acidified, mm-hmm. right? And so our bones and our tissues are dumping calcium, magnesium, and potassium in an effort to help regulate our pH. When you begin to consume magnesium bicarbonate, you're improving your pH. Your body doesn't have to work so hard to maintain the proper pH, and you're replenishing magnesium in cells. And with something like high blood pressure, you can see mm-hmm. an effect within a day or two of using magnesium supplements. A day or two.
That's
with
amazing.
More advanced processes, you know, like if you have calcification of blood vessels or, you know, you have a heart arrhythmia like AFib, it may take a few months of steadily supplementing. But I would say minerals. If people had to start with one supplement, you want mm-hmm. to acquire a product that will give you 60 minerals. There's trace minerals, there's the alkalinizing minerals we just talked about, and then there's something called colloidal minerals, required in very minute doses, but very, very important to the overall functioning of our cells.
Is there a product that you'd recommend that could handle?
Well, there is. I work with Youngevity, and there's a product they have that you'd be interested in. It's called Beyond Tangy Tangerine. 88 essential nutrients. You would use additional essential fatty acids in the form of EPA or DHA, but it's not mega multivitamins. It's a balanced synergistic blend of the amino acids, the 60 minerals, your water-soluble vitamins, your fat-soluble vitamins, and additional antioxidants. And I've seen this product actually do wonderful things for people. And you can order it from my website, or you can just simply look it up. It's called Beyond Tangy Tangerine. I've been using this for a couple of years. Highly recommend it. It's a great place to start. And you might actually be interested in contacting the company, Dr. Lewis, so you can have it available for your patients, you know?
Exactly. As a matter of fact, I actually take it myself to tell you the truth. So I do know it pretty well. What about things like fibromyalgia? Because that's, to me, an overload of acidity as well, is it not?
It is. It's an overload of acidity. And, you know, the body is so brilliant. So as you're exposed to toxins throughout our 21st century life, it's going to do the best it can to keep it away from your brain, your heart, and what we call, you know, the organs, the functions you can't live without. It will begin to store toxins within connective tissue, and it begins, of course, to injure the mitochondria, right?
Mm-hmm.
And have different effects on the immune system. So with fibromyalgia, the first thing that you really want to be able to help someone do, I recommend a lot of raw food. And, of course, when I say raw, if your digestive system is not, if it's been stressed for a long time, a little bit of juicing, you know, to get you going, maybe working with a blender. It can be really hard to kind of just jump on the raw food bandwagon. But what raw foods do is they actually, chlorophyll in particular, anything with chlorophyll, if you don't have a juicer, if you don't want to juice kale and, say, lemons, you get yourself a good chlorophyll supplement. Because chlorophyll is identical to hemoglobin, with the exception it's got magnesium, we have iron. And what it does is it's a blood cleanser. It helps to cleanse toxins from the blood. It chelates them and moves them out of the body. And so with fibromyalgia, I would start with, again, some dietary changes. I would work with a very, what I would call, low-stress diet. Would start them on something like a Beyond Tangy Tangerine, and then I would make sure that they supplement with some additional chlorophyll, whether it's fresh juicing or if they have to get it in a capsule like spirulina or chlorella. These are...
Okay.
Yeah.
So these are pretty easy things. You can just... It doesn't cost a lot of money. It doesn't take a lot of time, but it has a big effect on balancing you.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, you mentioned with fibromyalgia, they want that magnesium. They need additional magnesium. Think about how tight everything is, right? Think about
exactly.
The trigger points. They need that magnesium. No, this is why, this is the beauty of it. And I used to laugh when I transitioned to functional medicine. I was at a conference, and I asked the president of the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, how is it possible I spent so much money and so much time and I know so little about health? And he burst out laughing. He said, he says, a lot of people feel that way, Lorraine. You're just being honest. But, you know, and then I turned around and I laughed and I said, geez, everything I really need to know about health I could have learned from my grandmother. She used to always say, eat right, get plenty of sleep, be nice to yourself, and be nice to everybody else.
You don't have to reinvent the wheel, right?
I mean, right.
By the time you finish drugging people with narcotics, and now they have this new one that's even stronger than oxycodone, which is actually quite frightening. I mean, it's just putting a Band-Aid on things. I mean, I would think that if most people, all they want is the same thing, which is to be healthy.
Right.
We've been sold a bill of goods, and it takes a drug to do it. It takes a pill to do it. And we need to unlearn that.
Well, we've got the propaganda of heroic medicine. Now, there is such a thing as heroic medicine. I mean, if you get torn to shreds in a car accident, we are beautiful at putting you back together, right? So we do a great job in the ice. There is that aspect of Western medicine called heroic medicine that is very, but 85% of those of us that are sick or seeing a doctor, we're ambulatory medicine. We're just suffering from degeneration. We're not, we're not in need of heroic medicine.
No. And you wonder of the people, and I think I read an article, I have to remember where I read it, but one of those beta blockers was cause of over 800,000 unnecessary deaths worldwide. I mean, so we're talking medications that have a risk and benefit profile to them. And before I prescribe anything, I always weigh the risk and benefit for my patient. And knowing that you can be one step away from a bad outcome or a bad result, I think people need to really, you know, I think doctors need to question, do you really need to write this antibiotic? Do you really need to write this medication? But when you only have 7 or 8 minutes to spend with the patient and it's about get them in, get them out, that's what
and
you
there
get.
Are, and as you said, there still are plenty of patients who want that quick fix, who don't want to take responsibility.
True.
They want the prescription. So,
Who's leading the show, though? I mean, nobody comes into my office and says to me, I want an antibiotic, write it. It's not going to happen in my office. So, and I'm not calling in a pain medicine or an antibiotic unless I see them. So, you know, we do run the show. Nobody can tell us what to write, really. You're going to tell me what prescription I'm going to write for you? I don't think so. And the pharmaceutical company's not going to do it on TV either. So, I mean, everybody needs to take responsibility now. Doctors, too, who... I think part of this is it's all driven by fear. Doctors are afraid they won't get a patient unless they kowtow. Patients are, you know, driven by, you need this pill, otherwise you'll get wrinkled or you won't have good breath or you won't have white teeth. I mean, give me a break. Someone has to be an adult here somewhere, I think.
Right. No, I'm with you on that. You know, you brought up a really important point, one that I hope you don't mind, but I think it's worth going back to.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a beta blocker. I mean, we can look at what happened with Vioxx. We can look at FDA approval. What I would stress to your listeners is that it's bought out by the pharmaceutical industry. There are more drugs recalled than there actually are, and it's this whole thing about patenting and so forth. Drugs are I forget the year when they released the Journal of the American Medical Association released an article that said that pharmaceutical medicine, when practiced as prescribed, meaning not mistakes, was the third leading cause of death in our country. And other people did that evaluation and basically came up with, well, if you actually look at the numbers this way or that way, it's the leading cause of death in our country. Because we don't, you know, when people are really, really sick, what do? We give them more and more drugs. Mm-hmm. If you're really, really sick, you can't detoxify those drugs.
Kind of an oxymoron.
Yeah, well, and they're also derived from the rain. I mean, every patented pharmaceutical basically came to market because of an understanding of a natural substance that had a particular kind of effect, but you can't patent a natural substance.
Yes. So and once again, you have to follow the money, like you said.
Right.
Last minute, can you tell us how our listeners can find your radio show? Because you have a daily radio show, correct?
Monday through Friday, yeah. Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, and you simply Google Uncommon Awareness on GCN Live with Dr. Lorraine Hurley. It's that easy. And my website is drhurley.net. If you'd like to send me an email or sign up for my newsletter, I encourage that. You can also access any of our archives. So if you can't listen live, there's a downloadable app, and there are archives maintained on my website. Thank you for allowing me to say that.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I hope you come back, because we only scratched the surface of the art of medicine.
I will come back anytime you ask me. I will be
here. Thank you so much. That's an honor.
Thank you, Dr. George.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I want to thank everybody for listening to Medicine on Call today, and I look forward to having you back next week.